Would you do me a favor and draw things that can be built?
Hello, construction industry professionals. You're listening to The Art of Construction, specifically designed for contractors and architects to help grow your business. Here are your hosts, Devin and Kevin.
The only constant is change, so let's talk about it. We're going to dive in and have a fireside chat with Doug Pat, who works as a consultant, as a project manager out of his home for a great architect firm, Job Plus Partnerships Architects. I'm excited, Kevin, to go in and have this conversation, as I think this is really where a lot of things are going, to where people can really work out of their home, work hard, play hard, and really get that relationship dialed in. So I want to really talk to him about how he's built this, his business within the business that we talk a lot about.
No, absolutely. He lives a couple hours away from the firm that he's been working with for many, many years. And it'll be interesting to see how he kind of coordinates all that and does all these amazing projects. So,
and a really fun guy talking to him. So I'm excited to dive in and have a fireside chat. So let's go in and have a good talk with Doug Pat. But first, as always, I'm Devin Tilley, and my day job, the president owner of Mountain View Window and Door and the host here on The Art of Construction.
And I'm Kevin Keefe, sales manager and chief relationship officer here at Mountain View Window and Door and co-host of The Art of Construction. Here we go.
All right, what's your favorite beverage?
Oh, that's so great. It's easy, beer.
Any favorite flavor?
Oh my goodness, I love them all, unfortunately.
That's kind of my slogan, Doug. All beer is good beer. Some just a little better than others, and depending on where you're at, right?
Agreed. And what season?
Exactly. We're in the summer season. What's your hot beer right now?
Oh, gosh. I'm a Miller High Life guy. I know that to me was absolutely awful beer, but man, I love it. I'm a Miller High Life guy.
That's fantastic. That's the first Miller High Life we've ever got.
I'm living the high life, baby.
Attaboy.
As good as it gets. Living the dream.
Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
Oh, my goodness. Switzerland. When I graduated from Penn State, I traveled in Europe for about a month and a half. I ended up staying for about a year and a half and working in a number of different architectural firms. But Switzerland by far is the most beautiful place I have ever been. I would love to go back someday. I also love Portugal. I lived in Oporto for a little while, and that was stunning as well. And Paris was great. I lived there and worked there too. But Switzerland was the best. The scenery is incredible.
Love it. All right. We need to hear one story about your year plus experience in Switzerland.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I've got a great story. I would point your listeners to a video I made called Architect Jumps from Moving Train. That's a video I made some years ago, and it's a true story about how I ended up jumping off a moving train, not once, but twice. A very harrowing experience is something I will absolutely never forget. You listen to the story and you will not believe it's real, but the whole thing is true. Someday I'd love to make a short film about it. I've actually looked into getting some people to do some animation for me to put that together, but that's probably another 10 years off.
Well, you're good. You didn't tell us the story, but you told people where to go hear the story or see the story. So good job.
Yep.
What's your favorite hobby when you're not working in the architectural field?
Oh, these are great. They're all easy. I'm a mountain bike guy, so I mountain bike just about every day. I lost about 40 pounds last year over the course of about 6 months, and I gained a little bit back, but I'm actually holding steady, and one of the reasons is I love to mountain bike, and I get out and do that. I've got a home office, so I don't have a commute, but so I call my commute out to the mountains 20 minutes to 40 minutes. I call that my commute, and then I exercise out there on the mountain for about an hour. I actually got a flat at the top of a mountain this morning, which was a sideshow. Anyway, that's what I like to do. That's my hobby.
Well, that leaves more room for Miller High Life.
It sure does.
And which mountains and what part of the country are you reside in?
I'm in Allentown, Pennsylvania. There have got to be 15 to 20 places that you can get to within an hour car ride of me. I typically ride out at a ski resort called Bear Creek, which is really wonderful. Some of the best mountain biking. I mean, I've heard on the East Coast here, I've got buddies that come from a couple hours away, and they really love riding it. It's very technical. There are some really, really challenging places out there to ride. I stay away from usually during the week when nobody's with me, but I love it. Just love it.
I share your passion. I have a place up in Breckenridge where we're here in Denver, Colorado, where we record. And last weekend did the Flume Trails for the first time up in Breckenridge. It was really a cool experience because it's where they ran all the water down into town when they were dredging and doing the mining, and they've made mountain mountain bike trails through all those. So it's, you're in these kind of all those years of the water rushing through there. And it's a really unique trail that we climbed up and down. And then we ended up coming into town in the kind of mountain bike, like, extreme course, which I've stopped doing that. When I was younger, I did that, and two knee surgeries later, I realized that I have a ways to go, so I better not break my body up anymore.
Right.
But I got to tell this story because I came out of the trees, and it was right at that moment where you're really feeling good, and you've got 20 miles in, so you feel like you're unstoppable, and I start doing these switchbacks. And didn't even see it. And all of a sudden, it was this huge tabletop. And you know how that stuff is when you're not ready and you just, and I go, whoo, and I'm flying. All of a sudden, I look up and there's this tourist there that was just taking pictures. And he goes, "You're captured forever." And I just kept going. I was like, "Holy shit, Devin, calm down. You got to go back to work Monday." That was my last Saturday mountain bike experience.
Oh, that's crazy, man. It sounds awesome. I'd love to try that.
Yeah. So come on out to Breckenridge. We have a lot of fun stuff here in the Colorado Mountains. And that's what's fun about turning on the microphone at Studio MVWD and meeting people all over the country. And that's what we're here to do today, is to peel back the layers and talk with Doug Pat, who wears a lot of different hats in the architectural community. And we want to focus on, he does a lot of consultant PM work for Job Plus Partners Architect, who the architect of record is Job Moore, who's a licensed AIA architect leading that firm. Tell us about what you do with them, and we'll go from there.
Well, I've been working with Job for about 17 years, probably 14, 15 of which have been as a consultant. So my wife and I lived up in New York when I started working with Job. And eventually we moved away and had kids, came back to the Pennsylvania area. Fortunately, Job has kept me on as a project manager up there. And most young people don't realize how much the internet has changed the business of architecture, but email and it's just the internet in general has changed the way that we can practice. And so I only need to be, when I'm running a job, I only need to be on site once or maybe twice a week, meeting with the clients and the contractors. And the rest of it, I can work out of my office, creating files and sending them all over the planet. So it's worked out really, really well. Job trusts me and I work real hard. I've got a lot of discipline. Growing up as a young person, as an architect in a studio, you've got to be disciplined and learn how to work quickly and efficiently in a studio. And I think I really took all of those abilities and that drive into my personal life. I can do that from a home office. So that's how I've been able to continue as a consultant with Job's office. So we do a lot of contemporary work in our firm. If you go to Job Moore, JOEBMOORE.com, you can take a look at the work of his firm. It's amazing. Job is a very talented guy and brings in a lot of really interesting people, clients. And so we get a lot of really neat projects. Most of them are in the New York and Connecticut areas. Some of them are across the country. I know we've done work out in California, and I worked on a job out in Aspen not too long ago. So we get some really neat projects. I enjoy working as a consultant. You know, that allows me to do lots of other things, or as you had said, wear some other hats.
Now, is your focus primarily custom residential, or do you get involved in commercial development as well? Or
yeah, that's a good question. We do all high-end residential work, so it's all multi-million dollar homes. They're not necessarily all real large. The budgets of the projects I typically work on are in the low millions, so a few million bucks to all the way up to 8 or 10 or maybe even further up the ladder. Almost everything we do is high-end residential. The firm just is working on getting a project which is not residential as of late, but that'll be, as far as I know, one of the first projects that is not a high-end residential job.
Hello.
Hi. I've been listening to The Art of Construction, and I noticed you guys have no sponsors. Why is that?
Well, thanks for the call. We do actually have a sponsor. It's Mountain View Window and Doors, our sole sponsor to run this great podcast, but we're always looking for quality companies that might have an interest in our audience of great architects and contractors.
So how could I become a sponsor for you?
Well, that's simple. This is Devin Tilley here, and the background of this is we are very specific about creating this show, that we don't want it to be a whole bunch of me, blah, 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 wah, 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 wah. This is all about you contractors and architects growing your business, and we're not going to fake it till we make it. This wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Mountain View Window and Door. The studio is in the best showroom in the nation, awarded by Anderson Windows and Doors out of Denver, Colorado. But the Art of Construction is its own standalone platform that is now on its own website, www.theartofconstruction.net, and we are looking for the best advertiser, and we're not going to just settle for anybody. This is like Mountain View Window and Door, only the best that makes sense. And if you want to be part of that, reach out to us on theartofconstruction.net on the message board, and we'll run it through to the department and see if it's a good fit. So we look forward to talking to you, but we're going to guarantee you, contractors and architects, this is not an advertisement or a plug. This is all about you to grow your business. Excellent. So I see a lot of the marketplace to where, especially now with the millennials, and they want to travel, work from home, and technology, like you said, has really changed the architectural field. And as we put a lot of energy into the art of construction, and our focus here is to for contractors and architects to grow their business, and technology comes up in every episode, as well as how they work within architecture firms nowadays compared to in the past. It was these big architect firms. You'd come into your office and you would hammer out plans and work through that. But the world has changed, and what's the right way to make that work? Like you talked about, you did this starting in New York, cranked it out, but then you had a family and for whatever reasons wanted to make that change, but you built the relationship. And that's the key to what you're doing with everything, is building that relationship to then build the framework. And that's what I would love to have you kind of explain, how that framework works from, correct me if I'm wrong, being a full-time employee with Job to going out and being a 1099, and how that kind of relationship worked for all parties.
Wow, that's a really great question. I don't think I've ever been asked that before. So as I said, I worked in Job's office for at least 4 years, if not a little bit longer. In fact, there was a kind of interstitial period where I drove from Allentown to Greenwich, which is only 2 hours away. And I did that for, I'm going to say, at least 3 years, maybe even longer. And I worked in the office for about 3 days a week. So I'd go up on a Tuesday, I'd come home on a Thursday, and I was in the office running those projects. But what I found is I really didn't need to be there. With the family and things going on back in Allentown, and my wife and I both work full time at the time. So it was almost better to be back home. But I think that word relationship was super important. So for Job to learn to trust that when I said I was working and the hours that I was billing, I really had to be in the office for, let's say, that 7 or 8 year period, where he and I developed a relationship, and he knew that I was working on the things I would be working on, the things that I said I was. Plus, he saw all of the work that I could ultimately generate. Plus, I had a significant amount of experience, maybe not back then, but I was developing this toolkit that I would then go on to use as a consultant. So it really was a relationship thing, and being able to be next to somebody for that number of years and gaining that trust, and then ultimately was able to simply work on my own elsewhere. And that's what I do today. One of the most important things is software. At How to Architect, I get a lot of emails from young people, and they ask me, what's the most important software to learn? And it doesn't sound like a really important question, but it is, because there are so many different architectural softwares out there. So I tell them, bottom line, we work in DWG file when I'm sending files around to all different people, and all these different programs create DWG files, but we're an ARCHICAD office. So I had to be in the office for years just to learn ARCHICAD, and I was on AutoCAD before that. So software is a big deal, and I use the same software as the office uses. They pay for the key, and they pay for the software and allow me to use it. That's how that works.
That's awesome. Talk a little bit about your project management role. I mean, obviously, you're involved from the beginning of a given architectural project and see it through the bidding process. But talk a little bit about how you coordinate all of that and what the most important ingredients are as you see it.
Well, for any architect, the most important thing is coordination. I don't think I was born a great businessman and a great coordinator. I kind of learned how to be at least decent at the thing, but got to be really good at keeping everybody up to speed on the process and where you are at any given time on a project, especially when people are bidding a job and everybody's got to have the right documents, or people are building a job and they've got to have the most up-to-date documents. So I would say coordination is probably the most important thing for a project manager. But again, everybody's working on a computer and every single consultant has an email address. So it makes it really easy to send documents, like I said earlier, all over the planet. You know, the biggest challenge is making sure that they're reading their emails and they're responding to you. So you could have five consultants and four of them get back to you and one doesn't, but you're so busy you forget about them. And 2 weeks later, they never got back to me. Email them and they're off working on other jobs and they're not reading their emails. And so that can be a little challenging. I would say the other big challenge for me is making sure that everybody's working at the same pace that I'm working at. If I've got one or two projects, I've got to make sure that everybody's keeping up with the architect and they're not falling behind, because ultimately those are the things that slow projects down, whether it's your civil engineer, your structural engineer, your audiovisual engineer, your, you know, whatever engineer is working with you. So
now what about when you're out in the field in terms of coordinating with the builder and all his on-site people with respect to verifying all the issues within the plan set and all that kind of thing to verify that things are being done the way you've kind of designed it? Talk a little bit about the coordination on that side of things.
Yeah, so what we'll do is on every project, we have a weekly meeting once construction begins. And at that meeting, we've got our contractor, the general contractor, and then we've got the owner. And so we'll have that meeting. And then typically the general contractor and I will meet following that. And then I will meet with his subs if I need to talk to them about anything that's going on at the project that might be challenging or that they have questions about. So I get there early. And I will simply walk the site and take a look at everything alone, make sure that everything is going according to our drawings and the clients. If there are any client concerns, I'll take a look at those issues. And then we have that big meeting with everybody and we can address any of that subject matter. And then the contractor will organize all of his subs to then meet with me following that meeting if they're not going to be meeting with the owner, which typically they don't. I mean, the owners, they're off to work and other things that they've got going. So that's the way we work it.
No, that makes sense. Talk a little bit about the relationship building and bridge building when it comes to dealing with contractors and the general contractor team. Do you find that you get any initial pushback when you're out in the field or beginning to talk about the work that they're doing and so forth?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. This is probably it's one area where I've learned the most over the course of time. And I think it was the biggest challenge for me as a young guy out on site with the contractors. I really value my relationship with the contractor. And it's actually probably my favorite thing on any job is the work that I do with the GC and all the subs. I love the interpersonal relationship stuff. And I really value the experience that they bring to the table. So I know that architects get a really bad reputation, have a bad reputation and continue to have one, because they go out on the site and they work like a bull in a china shop. And they talk to people not the way they like to be talked to. And they're not, contractors are generally not, may not be listened to by the architects. And I think it's just awful. I mean, I never understood it. I don't think I ever will understand that behavior. As a young guy, I got out there and I knew absolutely nothing. And these contractors all looked at me like, oh, it's the architect. You know, he's going to come out here and try to walk on everybody. And so you will, many times you get a little bit of an attitude from these guys. But at the end of the day, if you sit and you listen to them and you ask their opinion, many times you ask their opinion first, it really does help the process. It helps them understand where you're coming from, and it also helps them to work better as a team to develop a relationship. So that's really, really important. I'll tell you a quick story if I have time. Is that all right?
Absolutely.
On my first project as a project manager, really trial by fire, it was a job out in Baltimore, the suburbs of Baltimore, Owings Mills, Maryland. And we were working for a really nice guy and his wife, and the project was underway. And I found a mistake, I think in the foundations, or it was in some framing or something. It was very early in the job. And so I brought it up to the contractor and I said, look, it's my responsibility to tell the owner about this. And it really wasn't a big deal. And it was definitely something that, as an architect later in life, I would have never brought up with a GC at this point. But anyway, I looked at him and he said, Doug, at the end of this job, there's going to be two lists, one list of screw-ups under your name and one list of screw-ups under my name. And that is going to be an imaginary list, unless you want to keep that list. And he said, I know, based on your age, that the list is going to be longer underneath your name. So if you want to point out the problem to the owner right now, you're welcome to. You may want to rethink your behavior.
I absolutely love that story and what you just said, because that just hits me at the core, because that was really the reason Kevin and I started the Art of Construction, because we live day in, day out, and we call it the needs analysis and the golden triangle, where we as the supplier in our day-to-day life, our ideal customers, contractors and architects, when they get along, it's great. When they don't, it's a disaster. And piss poor planning equals piss poor execution. So that was the whole reason why we started this show. And it's all about to say, when I came to this industry, it's like the construction industry is like the barrier to entry. And it's like, to pay your dues, it's like the school of hard knocks. And a lot of people have a different management styles and different ways they do that. But a lot of general contractors will take the approach of pay your dues and put up a wall at first. And that creates this animosity sometimes, or vice versa, when an architect, they just draw these pretty pictures and they don't know what they're doing and we have to put it together. So there's this, every business or every level has that. We have that in the day-to-day, what I call sales and logistics. Nothing happens until you sell something, but if logistics, which is comprised of service, install, delivery, if they don't do that, you don't get the next sale. And I think that's where the architect and the general contractor, if they're humming together, the song sings. It really is the key to that relationship and working together. And I just love jobs when the architect and the contractor are buddies like you're talking about. But boy, they're not fun when it's the opposite. When they don't, like you talk about the emails, when one doesn't get back to you, or all about the cutthroat and value engineering. And if all you talk about is that, it takes a lot of the fun out of it. And I think the project really shows at the end when it's put together that way.
Yeah, we have a saying that the projects take on the complexion of the relationships. They really do. You know, many times they turn into Frankenstein when everything else is awful. So yeah, I get it, man. I mean, early on, I learned to keep my mouth shut and to be kind and to listen and to value other people's opinions. And, you know, that's the only way you may end up being successful. You're not going to end up very happy. So anyway, those things are really, really important to me. And it was funny, a couple days later, after that had happened, the contractor, as I said, I was a young guy, and he came up to me and he said, hey, Doug, follow me. And they had just dug this huge pit for the foundations, for the footings, for the new addition that I had drawn. And he said, come on down here. And they led me down a ladder, and it was real muddy and mucky. And he said, I'm going to give you the smart end of the tape measure, and you and I are going to lay out the foundations together, looking at your drawings. And I was like, oh my God, holy cow. I mean, it was really quite an experience. And we only sat down there for an hour or two and did a couple things and, you know, laid out these strings and chalk marks. And boy, it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek shot at me and my behavior early on. And at the same time, he and I ultimately became good friends. And it was a great experience, and I'm glad it happened early on. And those first few experiences as a manager were really trial by fire. But I tell young people that that's really the only way you're going to learn, is to really suffer early in the process and get it, learn your lessons, and move on and get good at your job.
Well, you know, one of the key things that we always hear about on the Art of Construction is the importance of collaboration. But sometimes it's the process of getting there. And I think you hit the nail on the head, literally, when you're talking about the fact that as you as an architect go on the job to meet with somebody representing the builder, whether it's the GC or one of his people, the first thing is to ask questions and try to get to know what's going on or what their thought process is. And from there, you can kind of weave in. Oftentimes what happens is what you experienced when you were younger, where you just kind of go in like a bull in a china shop, like you were saying. And oftentimes on the builder side, they view it as the police coming to inspect, if you will, to the job site. And it creates this animosity, and you never get to that point of being able to collaborate, and everybody suffers.
I wish more architects understood this. And when I see the ones, when I meet the ones that really are awful, I wonder what their private lives are like.
Well, and one of the other critical things, too, is that collaboration allows each side to understand a little bit better about what the other does so that you can then get a better product moving forward. And oftentimes, the architects don't spend enough time understanding the practical aspect of how things do go together so that they can draw things in a way that are more user-friendly, if you will.
One of the first things I learned, again, in this first office I worked at, I was out with the GC, and he looked at me and said, Doug, would you do me a favor and draw things that can be built? Draw them so that they can be built. It's not as though I hadn't been trying, but that made so much sense to me. I went back, and now whenever I draw anything, and I start with a line, I think about the fact that the thing can be built. Can the contractor get things as simple as, can the contractor get their hands into that space, move their fingers around, and be able to build the thing that I'm drawing? You got to think about these things. And my gosh, I mean, I look at drawings that are done even in our office at times by young people, and I just wonder who is telling these people what to do. They're not drawing things that can be built. They're not thinking about it that way. And so you got to sit down with them and talk to them about that.
Definitely. And like your comment earlier, where it's just painful learning, I think the key to the young people coming out of college or people that want to get into the industry, like your great YouTube video I watched this morning on how to architect, the key is attaching yourself to someone who has good systems and structure and is there to put the framework together to put you on a path to success. There's so many people that are just winging it in our industry, and the idea is just go out and do it and figure it out. Well, I think it's a lot harder, and you don't have enough time to make all the mistakes yourself. You got to have systems and structure to fast track and make those mistakes together. That comment what you just made is draw things that can be built. It sounds so simple, but every single day we're getting a set of plans, just as us being the supplier, to send back to say, no sizes, or this is 50 square foot on this opening, then can be built. The dream on paper, we want to help secure your vision, but architects attach yourself to people that understand how to execute that vision. And that's such a key thing that a lot of people, they just want to sit at their desk and say, don't bother me, I'm going to do whatever I want to do. But then if it can't become reality, don't you want to actually see what you put on paper be built?
Yeah, that's very, very true. I would say one of the barriers for architects in relation to your comment when we're drawing things is the litigious nature of our business and the fact that we don't want to put sizes on things at times because we're afraid it'll ultimately come back to bite us. And so you're always looking for the right consultant to give you that information and sign off on it. We find that many times at some point, whose responsibility is it to put it on paper that can ultimately be built? I don't want to spin off on a tangent on that, but I will say I see that a lot in our business, you know, with who's going to get sued, whose fault is it going to be? And everybody's afraid to call it, you know, what it should be called. It's a challenge.
Yeah, good point. And those type of things, we all have to understand and learn that. And that I do a lot of education and give and you will get. And that's what I love about when we did our research on you as far as writing books and your how-to architect, all these things that you're giving educationally to help CYA professionally without getting yourself in trouble. So I'd love to have you kind of talk through a few of those things that you've done. Tell us about your book and what you've done with YouTube.
Back in 2008, I started a YouTube channel called How to Architect, and that was really at the behest of a friend who said, hey, he was putting a website together. I have a website called www.abirdfeeder.com, and it's an invention. I created a bird feeder that's made of 8 flat polycarbonate parts. There's a patent on the thing. It locks and slides together. And so I still sell it online, and it's a great, really super fun product. Anyway, I was putting together the website for that. It's called the Architect's Bird Feeder. He said, Doug, your handwriting is really neat, and people love to learn how to do this, so you should make a video and just call it How to Write Like an Architect. And so I did. When I first posted the video, it ended up on a really popular website called Core 77, and I'll never forget the comments. I was so upset with what people said about this. You know, people are awful on the internet, and they really weren't that bad. But at the time, I was stunned that people could write things like, that guy's probably not even an architect, or his handwriting is awful. It was so demoralizing, and I made this video for free. Anyway, I ended up putting a couple other videos out there, and I eventually decided just to shut the channel down because I was so sick of all the mean comments. A couple months had gone by, and I told my wife, I said, you know, I really miss making those videos. I guess I shouldn't really care about what people think. And she had been pushing that idea all along, and she said, you know, I really think you should do this. So she was walking through the office one day, and I said, I'm going to sign back up for YouTube. What do you think I should call the channel? And she said, I don't know, How to Architect. And that was it. So I ended up posting a bunch of videos, and I've been making videos ever since. And I've got over, there are tons of private videos as well, but I think I have over 200 videos that are public. I'm still making videos every week. It's just all about architecture and architectural education. I decided to write a book back in 2010. Then try to get it published, and I was able to find out who the senior editor at MIT Press was back in the day and communicated with him, and the first book that he looked at, he wasn't interested in, but he said, if you've got something that's a little more like your website someday, let me know. And so I ended up writing another book that was an A to Z about architecture and sent it off to him, and he ended up really liking it. And so I got a lot of help. I was not at the time a very good writer at all, and I had a good friend, a guy named Kevin Strauss, who is a physician in the Lancaster area. He spent a lot of time helping me edit the book, as did a bunch of other people that I found online. And it's a really simple book. And as I said, I wasn't a writer at the time. And so I've learned a lot about writing, ultimately got it to a point with a lot of help with MIT Press where it was publishable. I did all the illustrations myself. I love to draw. It's worked out. You know, as far as I understand, it's still a top seller for MIT Press. It's in their top 100. It was published in 2012. And it's a great book for young people that are interested in becoming architects. It's a great book for people who are older, beyond the point at which maybe they're thinking about a career in architecture, want to learn more about architecture. And I think it's also a great book for people who want to be inspired, who are already architects, and they're kind of fed up with the field, and they want to look back at why they became an architect. So that's been wonderful for me. And I'm working on another book, which is currently an Instagram project. So if your listeners go to Instagram and they just go to @DougPatt, D-O-U-G-P-A-T-T, I'm doing a project where I post a 15-second video every single day this year, 2016. I'm currently about 3 months ahead on the project. It has been excruciating in terms of the time that it takes to make these videos, in between an hour and 3 or 4 hours a day. Some of the ones that are original artwork are very time consuming. But anyway, I'm going to coalesce all that information at the end of the year here. That's why I'm ahead, trying to get ahead. And I'm going to self-publish that book and then try to get MIT Press interested in the thing. It's a much bigger project, though. It's probably going to end up being all color illustrations. And with the help of, there are a series of websites now out there that were not around 8 years ago. One's called like Pixabay, for example, and people post really good images and they're copyright free. And that's really the big challenge with making videos across the board, is find imagery of buildings that do not have copyrights on them that you can then post without, you know, any issues. And so it's taken about 8 years. There are going to be some great images in the book, and they're copyright free. And then there's lots of images that I've created when I can't find copyright free imagery, or when I want to teach a concept that isn't readily knowledge based. So anyway, it's a really cool Instagram project, and it's just educational stuff about architecture. And this is one fact a day about architecture. It's super cool. I think it's a monumental project, and I'm really excited about the thing when it's all done. So anyway, that was a long explanation, but that's my next my next project.
No, awesome. Tell us a little bit about your teaching. You've been an adjunct professor, I take it?
Yeah, so I did a little teaching in a local community college, Northampton Community College. They've got a great architecture program in which lots of the credits that you get at the community college level are then accepted by universities across the country. That's a big deal. As far as I understand, that doesn't happen very often. So anyway, I taught a little bit over there, and then I was at Penn State for, I think it was two semesters. I just loved it. I mean, really great experience. It's a few hours from here, so it's a little challenging to get to do that. And then I have something online called the Architects Academy. If you go to architects.academy, that is a Teachable website, teachable.com. And there's a bunch of free stuff on there. There's a Could You Be an Architect quiz that I developed many years ago, and it just kind of helps you figure out whether or not you've got the aptitude and interest to be an architect. And there are a bunch of very inexpensive little classes you can take on there about how to write like an architect and how to design like an architect and some fun things there. Anyway, there was the Architects Academy, and that was a one-month-long course that I was teaching, one class a week. I've been doing that, gosh, probably for five years. I just don't have the time to put into it currently, so I'm not doing that as of right now. But I am working on another class called How to Make an Awesome Video. What I really love to do, I love to do public speaking stuff. And so I get asked to do a talk maybe once a year somewhere. And lately, I've been doing some talks on how to make videos, because it's just something that not many people know how to do, particularly people my age. So I'm 47. And you've got all these, this isn't just architecture, this is across the board. I get asked by people all the time in other businesses, how the heck do I make a video and post it on YouTube? I'm going to do a class just based on this talk I've been doing called How to Make an Awesome Video, and goes through all the really simple steps to making videos. So if your listeners want to just email me, dpatt@mac.com. I'll probably be putting that course on maybe in a month or two. I had tons of interest at the last talk I did to just architects, but I wasn't able to put the course together. So anyway, I'm working on that as well.
Well, one of the things that we always ask our guests is a couple of key questions to finish up the show. And the first one is to give us a little bit of a description of your most unique project in the last 12 or 18 months.
Well, I worked on a job in Rye, New York. There are a series of videos that are programmed. They're called Modern House. I believe it's Modern House in New York. They're on YouTube. And I think there are three videos, and they document the process. We had some great clients. The project is a contemporary addition to a traditional English Tudor. And it's in Rye, New York. If you go to the wall, it was published in the Wall Street Journal a few months back. So if you go to WSJ and you type in English Tudor contemporary, and the name of the owners is also published in the article, it's Periello. That was a super cool project. And we won a Connecticut AIA award for that job. Great clients, great project, very interesting.
Awesome. And then on the flip side, what was the most challenging project you'd say you've done in the last year or two?
Oh, gosh, I can't even talk about it. I'm not kidding. It's too dramatic. Too dramatic. We've all had challenging projects, and we all have really wonderful projects. So some test our mettle, and others are create lots of smiles in our lives.
better left unsaid.
Yes. I guess we won't learn from that one, but the learning lesson is that don't try to avoid those from the front end by having good relationships, right?
Yes, exactly. You can tell what clients are like when you first meet them, and we don't always know how they will ultimately behave, but the best predictor of future behavior is present behavior. So I like to keep that in mind when I meet people and think about whether or not I'm going to be working with them. I can tell you the craziest job I ever worked on was I did a cat bathroom. We ended up putting a fan in some millwork, and we had to make the opening for the cat. They were Siamese cats, and we had to make the opening small enough that the pug, they had two dogs, one of them was a pug, that the pug couldn't get into the opening because it loved to eat stuff out of the kitty litter. So I had to measure the dog's height and head size, and then had to create an opening in the millwork. And it wasn't just an opening, it was a classical portico, right? So we did this really awesome classical detailing with columns around this square opening that the cat could get in and out of. And then we put the kitty litter in there, and we had an operable door. And then when the cat would leave, the fan would turn on. So
that's really cool.
Well, that
actually
is a first. You've hit on several firsts in this. Yeah. In this discussion,
yeah, that
so that's
was
awesome.
Super cool, great, really fun clients.
How did the architectural details work for that? Was it modeling of the animals?
All I had to do was really measure them, and back then we weren't doing any three-dimensional modeling, so everything was drawn, okay. Everything was drawn 2D using your intuition.
Awesome. Yeah,
that's awesome, man. Well, thanks so much for coming in and telling us your story. We'll put all the show notes out there with all the great things you're doing to make the architectural community that much more
all
fun.
Right. It was really neat to talk to you guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Doug.
At the end of the day, I really want to supply windows to Doug Pat and have a lot of fun doing it, because on the job site, I love having the collaboration meetings where everybody's got skin in the game and takes care of it. What a cool guy that is a lot of fun to get to know in the architectural community.
No, absolutely. And he's got the best of both worlds in a way. I mean, he's got a lot of experience and wisdom, and yet at the same time, he's on the edge of technology, keeping up with things that we need to be able to keep up with to be able to do our work effectively. And he hasn't lost sight of the importance of the things that we talk about frequently, which is the importance of great collaboration, communication, and building of relationships. Because without all that, really, what are we doing?
Yeah, so I challenge you to go to the show notes and check out his YouTube channel, as well as check out our YouTube channel through the day-to-day as MBTV, where we're talking about all the different things. And it's helped us gain so much respect by learn by doing and putting the things out there. And I watched a few of his videos, really well done, really enjoyable on all of his kind of side projects, and anxious to see kind of where they from here of trying all these new things. And I'm definitely going to go get a copy of his book and give it a read.
You've been listening to The Art of Construction, specifically designed for contractors and architects to help grow your business. To listen to more, please go to www.mtnview.us and click on the podcast tab. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, and thanks for listening.